Around Comics, Episode 30. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Heidi ho.
And we have our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
My pick of the week is Adam number one. Fit that in.
We will reveal our mystery guest in just a couple moments. But first, I do want to say that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by GeekArmor.com. Mr. Sal, can you tell the fine folks out there about Geek Armor?
GeekArmor.com sells t-shirts with the geek in mind, featuring a great selection of comic book t-shirts as well as video game, sci-fi, TV, and movie shirts. You are sure to find something you like. Check out their latest design, a red shirt with a phaser hole on the front that reads, "I went on an away mission and all I got was this lousy t-shirt." And now the good folks at GeekArmor.com are offering a 10% discount to all Around Comics listeners. Just use the coupon code AROUNDCOMICS, all one word, when placing your order and receive an additional 10% off. GeekArmor.com, check them out today.
And also, Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, even though this is Saturday morning.
So
a little radio magic there.
Forever.
Dark Tower is located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. You can get 20% off during show recordings. Just mention Around Comics during your checkout and receive 20% off. It is that easy. Our June contest is all wrapped up. We will announce the winner of our haiku contest at the end of the show. One last note, if you enjoy Around Comics and download through iTunes, which we know the majority of you do, please drop by the iTunes Music Store and write us a quick review. Just takes a couple minutes, and it means more than we could possibly say. Now, I will let our listeners know that this will be a little bit different format than our normal shows. We interviewed our two mystery guests this week, and we have split that up into two different episodes. Okay, Sal's telling me they're not mystery guests. We interviewed Michael Avon Oeming and Ivan Brendan, so you're going to get two different interviews for the price of one. The first one will be released today, which is Monday, and the second interview will be released on Wednesday. So make sure to tune back in and get the second half of that story. So we're going to talk with Michael Avon Oeming in just a moment, and then we'll come back for some final announcements, and that will be our show. Tune in again next Monday, and we'll have another full-length episode of Around Comics, complete with wire-to-wire comic news and top-of-the-stack reviews and recommendations.
You can always call me if you want to find out what I think about the news.
And Tom, once again, Tom picked the Adam number one.
I'm just trying to get that in.
I picked the latest issue of Detective Comics. That's and it. Sal, what was your top of the stack?
I don't even have
He doesn't
it.
Even have one. There's nothing even. We don't even like comics anymore.
All right. So without further ado, let's move on to the interview with Michael Avon Oeming.
Roll.
And we're joined today by one half of the creative team of the new limited series from Image Comics titled The Cross Bronx. He is Michael Avon Oeming.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Michael, thank you for being on the show, and welcome to Around Comics.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate being here.
Well, it's great. We may be joined by your partner on the Cross Bronx, Ivan Brendan, a little bit later. So we will keep an eye on the phone lines. It sounds like he has been out enjoying the New York nightlife.
No, I think he was solving the whole missile crisis in North Korea. So
wow.
It took a little while on that.
I know he's been busy, but man.
So by the time you hear this, world peace will be accomplished.
Either that or we'll all be annihilated.
There will be no comic books, so this podcast is
Ivan Brendan.
Well, Michael, we are on the panel very excited about the new project that you guys have announced, and that being the Cross Bronx. It's a little bit of an interesting twist for you guys because it's you are co-writing and illustrating this. But I tell you what, better than us describing it, can you tell us a little bit about the Cross Bronx and how that project came about?
Well, I met Ivan Brandon around 2000 or 2001. At a show in New York City when I very first was promoting Powers. And I met him and Miles Gunter at the same time. And Miles, we ended up doing Best of Samurai together. But Ivan and I met, and we clicked right away. And early on in my Powers days, I had a bunch of different projects that started to congeal in my head, but I didn't feel confident in myself as a writer at that point, which is why I began working with a lot of different co-writers on projects. And Ivan was one of these dudes. And I had this project that was called The Cross Bronx, which I'll get into, you know, kind of why that came about in a sec. And I asked Ivan, I knew Ivan was doing some writing, and I wanted to check out some of what he was writing. And I was like, all right, this guy could definitely, you know, he's definitely got chops, and, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll work together well. So I gave him this vague outline, and then we sort of ping-ponged it back and forth till eventually we had this script. Which is generally how I work with guys when I co-write with somebody. It's sort of this ping pong effect of, you know, I'll have sort of a nugget of an idea that I've written down, and then I'll start breaking it down into issues, and then bouncing it back and forth with each other until we have a finished script. And so this goes all the way back to, you know, 2000 or so. One of the reasons it's taken so long is. Two reasons. One is because sometimes a project will come up and it just develops faster. Or, which is typical now, I won't solicit one of my side projects until it's pretty much finished. And this being four issues, I think I finally started drawing it about 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half. And from that point till now, it's just been a matter of drawing it in between issues of Powers. When I've caught up on scripts, or when I just have a couple extra hours, just do a page or something. So it's been a very slow process of getting it finished. And this way, it doesn't get solicited, and I have to struggle to stick with the schedule.
Well, that's one thing.
Which is always a nightmare. I've learned in the past not to let that happen anymore, which is why I try to get things finished before we solicit. So right now, as we speak, of the four issues, three are completely penciled and inked. So I've got till December to finish the last one.
Nice. Well, I really respect that because it seems like in comics today you see a lot of first and second issues that will come out and one right after the other. And then sometimes it's a 3, 4, 6 month wait until the next issue so that you aren't soliciting until you're almost completely done with the series. Is really refreshing to hear that.
Well, it's part of it. It's just trying to alleviate nightmares on my part, but also, especially for a miniseries or a series that's just started out, that'll kill it, you know, no matter how good it is.
Well, I think it's just, you know, interesting that, you know, you have guys that you've worked with over the years, and obviously, you know, on Powers and the different work you've done. But with this series, you know, it is interesting to me that you're co-writing it. How is that process working with Ivan as far as, you know, you're illustrating it, but you're also credited as a co-writer? What is that process like?
Well, we work on a script together. You know, and the scripts have been around for a couple of years where, you know, we would put it down for like a year and not work on it or so. But typically, say I've written out an issue, the dialogue's really loose and sloppy and some of it's missing and stuff, and I'll send that over to Ivan, and Ivan will take that loose and sloppy dialogue and go, this is what he meant to do. And then he'll add on to it and make it, give it more dimension and such. And I'll take those other scenes that didn't have any dialogue, and then he'll start to dialogue those. Then I'll take those dialogue scenes that he wrote, and then I'll do that sort of same process to it, going, well, this, I think this is what he meant to do. And then, you know, I flesh out the scene. Once we've done that enough, it kind of just comes down to just fleshing out the details, which we go back and forth on. Then once I actually draw a page, many times I'm not rewriting a story, but repacing it for the sake of the art, or maybe adding a splash page or something like that. So we still let it be organic, even in that scene. So when I hand the pages in or the issue in, I'll typically have a slightly, again, a slightly rewritten scene. And then even after that, before it gets lettered, Ivan will go through one last time and, you know, cross the G's and dot the O's or whatever it is. You know, he'll do like a final sweep. So when it comes to co-writing, we really are, it's a matter of fact of just bouncing back and forth. I couldn't point at an issue and tell you which words I wrote and which words Ivan wrote, you know. And we're pretty happy with that. It's really exciting to get to finally draw something that I'm, you know, writing or even co-writing, because I haven't really done that yet. Most of the stuff that I've worked on with other people, I haven't drawn myself, so I'm really excited about that.
So one of the things I'm interested in is when people co-write, because I've tried co-writing things with people not in comics. And it's interesting because it either goes sort of naturally or you end up hating the person.
Yeah.
Did you find it to be easier than you thought it was going to be, or was it more challenging than you thought it was going to be?
Well, I guess it's a little bit easier as far as when you're writing something with somebody else, I suggest that somebody not be in charge, because that's the wrong way to put it, but somebody has to be have the one foot slightly, you know, in the lead. Otherwise, it can get confusing, and you can go in completely different ways. That's not to say that Ivan and I don't, you know, that we disagree on stuff, or don't disagree, because we do, but, you know, when you've known each other long enough, and you understand and trust each other long enough, you're able to trust each other's sensibilities. And also, if an origin story takes place with one of the people, then it's easier for, you know, decisions to be made in the long run and such. So that helps.
You can always settle everything with arm wrestling anyway. if it really gets down to it.
Well, that won't be fair because Ivan has huge guns.
Nice.
What do you like better? Do you like writing or illustrating a book better or neither? Mm-hmm. And do you plan on doing any work where you'll do both duties?
It depends on the day. You know, the thing I like about writing is I really can do it anywhere at any time, whereas art, it's not just a physical location, but if I'm really tired, I have trouble just sitting at the board. I'll find myself easily distracted and such. Whereas if I'm really tired when I'm writing, it's actually easier to write in a way because I'm more in touch with the sort of, you know, the subconscious and all that, you know. For me, a big part of writing is listening to that little voice inside your head. And I don't mean the ones that, you know, say to kill people and stuff.
Kill your neighbors.
Well, you know, like when you write something and you show it to somebody else, and they'll point out something and you'll go, and you'll realize that you realize that in the back of your mind, right?
Right.
You'll say, oh, I meant to change that, or you're right, I meant to blah, blah, blah. I think a big part of writing is listening to that little voice so that you can catch that stuff when it happens. And when I'm tired or I've had a couple of drinks, it's easier to do. Whereas with drawing, you know, I can't. I'm falling asleep on the couch and taking 3-hour naps in the middle of the day. And then, oh, my God, it didn't work. And blah, blah, blah.
Well, you had started to develop quite a reputation of being a very accomplished comic book artist in the last few years, and you know, I love Powers and was very familiar with your work there, and then I started to see this Oming guy pop up with writing credits, and you know, you've worked on what, Red Sonja and Ares and
Thor, the What If Thor story,
which you wrote and drew. What
If was written by Robert Kirkman.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. My mistake.
Now we're never going to get him as a guest.
Bad research. But yeah, do you see yourself continuing to do dual duties in comics? You know, does that charge you?
I'm definitely not leaving the art behind at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's tough, but I am going to, at least at Marvel, try and push the writer artist thing in the future, you know, of drawing the stuff that I'm writing. It's still tough, though, because my style isn't exactly a mainstream style by any standard. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to be doing more of the writing, drawing, you know, doing both chores myself with my creator-owned stuff more in the future.
Well, I tell you what, we hear a lot of people scream for Michael Avon Oeming to do a turn on Thor as both writer and artist. And I know that we're getting off the subject across Bronx, and we'll come right back to it. But would that ever intrigue you to do even a six-issue run on Thor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're bringing Thor back now, and I think it's clear they're in the middle of that process with Civil War after issue two came out. They've got, big plans for Thor initially, and I think if I get to work on Thor, I would prefer to do it sort of be like the second or third guy on Thor, mm-hmm. as opposed to the first or second dude, because it's easier to come in later to something that's been revamped, I think, than to be there at the beginning.
You don't want to be the guy thrown out of the airplane first?
Well, sort of. I mean, the thing with Thor is he's very tricky. I mean, there are a couple characters at Marvel that have these really diehard fans. Thor and the Hulk are two of them, and they're really kind of out there sometimes. So to bring back Thor, you have to do it in a way that isn't going to burn the old fans. And yet you have to do something with Thor that changes him and makes him modern enough to attract new readers or people who didn't read Thor before, which is a really tough job. And I think you have to really, in the end, you kind of have to do one or the other, So I think I'd prefer to come into it later on and such than... the initial guy is going to be both loved and hated. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which in a way is good. You know, I mean, it's good to evoke those kind of strong emotions from people.
Well, while it hasn't been, obviously official at any point, but I mean, it seems like Donald Blake is coming back as Thor, or at least he's picking up the hammer. We don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
But to me, that seems like the right way to bring him back. And what you had touched on about not burning the fan, the old time fans of Thor. To me, I was a Thor fan for a long time, and I sort of lost interest in him after a while because I felt he sort of lost his humanity. He was no longer attached to Donald Blake, and I had no way to sort of connect with that character because he was an Asgardian.
This is where it gets really weird. You would think that that's the case with the diehard Thor fans, but most diehard Thor fans actually hate Donald Blake. Which was
kindly crippled
to me.
How could you hate the man?
I can't stand him. I mean, there's a specific message board that's kind of the core Thor message board area, and for the most part, they can't stand Donald Blake, and they go, I don't need Donald Blake to relate to Thor. They just want the Thor kicking people's butt, in the mythology thing and stuff. And they kind of hate Donald Blake. And I sort of, when I first was writing Thor, I didn't hate Donald Blake, but I wasn't interested in him. And it wasn't really until I started writing a bunch of Thor that I realized how intricate Blake is to Thor. I think the problem is a lot of people just handled Blake in a relatively bland way.
Right.
That the character himself became uninteresting.
He was sort of Clark Kent in the fact that he was just sort of there after a while.
It was like a standard thing you had to throw in there to have some Donald Blake scenes while you waited for the Thor stuff. And I think a great writer like Bendis, when he wrote Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man isn't about Spider-Man fighting Dr. Octopus in the streets. It's about Peter Parker. You know, he made Peter Parker the interesting part, so that when Spider-Man showed up and Peter Parker was there, they were just both storylines were just as interesting, mm-hmm. and that's really how you have to approach any character who has a significant alter ego.
Well, hardcore Thor fans are wrong then. So,
and I'm right.
Hardcore Cross Bronx fans. Yeah. What do they think?
I tell you what, let's get back to the Cross Bronx, because that's is probably the number one reason we wanted to have you on the show, because we're excited about it coming out. Now, we talk sales numbers from time to time on the show, mm-hmm. and look at there's obviously going to be a big difference between Marvel and DC sales on the mm-hmm. premiere of a book and books that come out from Image or any other alternative press books.
Yeah.
Now you guys are really pouring yourself into this book, and I know that you want it to be very successful. What if you don't mind, what type of initial sales on the Cross Bronx would make you moderately happy on that first issue?
Hey, and it's hard to say because the industry's changed so much and stuff. I'd be moderately happy with around 15 to 20 on it. Part of the thing is with a crime book, you have sort of a ceiling on crime books, which seems to be around 40,000. Even at Marvel and DC, they don't seem to do much more than that. That seems to be the high end of, you know, what you can do with a crime book. One of the reasons we really want this to do so well, and why I'm pushing for it so hard, is because we've worked on it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of it, like these sort of one-shot deals, like Parliament of Justice and Six, 86 Volts of Death Girl, KO Day. These are all these one-shot books that I've done and put out. And those I don't expect to perform really well because they're sort of these self-contained, sometimes relatively strange, one-off ideas. And, you know, I take, I don't know, 8 or 9 months to a year working on them with other artists and writers and stuff. But this is something that we've been working on since, you know, 2000 or something like that, you know, 7 years. And I've been drawing it for the last 2 years. And it's 4 issues. So, you know... and it's also a book, I think, that is right along the same lines as Powers. I think anybody who reads Powers should easily be able to pick this up and enjoy it just as much, or almost as much. So we're pushing really hard on it. And a second part of the reason is just because the industry has gotten so... it's just difficult now to get your books out there and to be seen, because it's not just Marvel and DC with their big events, you know, quote, pushing the other books off the shelf. It's in the independent market, we push ourselves off of the shelf by having so many books out there.
Well, there's a lot of really good comics out there, and we talk about it. It's the double-edged sword in comics right now. There's probably, yeah. You know, in my lifetime, there's never been a better time to have so much available to you, but there's yeah. never been a worse time to have to pick what to read. And we have this bizarre sense of obligation by doing this podcast and trying to be involved fans that we have to read everything, and you can't do it.
Yeah, it's really tough. You know, that's one of the reasons why I'm doing your show or pushing stuff on Newsarama constantly. We're putting lots of artwork out there so people can see what's coming out. Even pushing the whole marketing edge a little bit with, you know, we've got some alternate covers, which they're not incentive covers. You don't have to buy any more issues or anything else, you know. We've got Asad Ribic did a beautiful cover, Dave Johnson the cover, and just yesterday Ashley Wood has agreed to do a cover. So we're really excited and just doing everything we can to you know, give bits and pieces to retailers and to... internet posters and such out there to see, you know, what they could be getting with the crossbond.
You also have a really cool trailer that you put together online for the Cross Bronx, and that sort of brings up my next question about, you know, the internet and how it's changed the industry. I mean, you've been doing comics, and you came from independent comics and that, and how do you see that the internet has changed the industry positively or negatively? For publishers, self-publishing, and even big, you know, mainstream comics.
The only negative down part of the internet stuff has been sometimes personal information will get out about people that shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we have to remember this isn't this isn't Hollywood and this isn't Star Magazine and stuff. You know,
we won't repeat the story about the goat, Mike.
Well, my stuff I'm fine with. I'm actually very open about. My love for goats. I'm actually a very open person when it comes to, you know, just that sort of stuff in general. But I have seen some stuff come out by other people. I'm like, man, there's no reason to publish that. Nothing to do with comics and stuff. So that's kind of the downside of it. But I think it's pretty far outweighed by the good side, which is, I mean, it's free promotion for your material now. You know, I can take, if I wanted to, I could have taken... if I had the time or the know-how or whatever, I could have taken the first issue of Cross Bronx and cut up that first issue into basically sort of a daily strip and had, you know, run for like a month, the first issue, for free online for people to read, and it would be like a running advertisement for the book before it ever comes out. And then you have cats like PVC Guy, I forget his name, Scott... there's a book called PVC, which basically it just started out as an online strip, and he slowly built an audience on the online strip, put his book out, and it was immediately a hit.
Right.
You know, that just was impossible back in the day. Back in the day, I remember 1995, 96, I'm doing Ship of Fools, which was a creator, one of my first creator-owned books that I did. And the only way that I could really promote it, because I couldn't afford to take out an ad in Wizard Magazine or these other things, I remember printing up little postcards and getting a list of about 3,000 retailers. And, you know, again, this is before the easier days of emailing and stuff. So I had to snail mail each of these postcards to every retailer that I could. It took, you know, a couple of days to do, you know, just to get that stuff together. And, you know, the only other way back then to promote was to just hit the road. But you don't have to do that as much anymore. And the internet's amazing for that.
Well, one thing that we're seeing from some creators is that they will put out teaser issues of comics, mm-hmm. maybe an issue or two issues worth, and then they'll go straight to trade paperback because the bookstore market is increasing. Was that ever a consideration with the Cross Bronx?
Not with the Cross Bronx. I think I always want to do it with the individual issues. The thing about individual issues is versus going straight to trade. And now individual issues are pretty much an advertisement for the trade. You know, it's shelf life. Basically, Cross Bronx will be on the shelf for 4 months, and then we won't do the trade for, you know, we'll wait till those issues sell out and stuff. I think one of the things that people have to consider now, if you're doing a regular monthly book, is to find reasons for people to buy the monthly. And that's not by putting exclusive material that they can't get in there and, you know, that kind of crappy stuff. You want to make the individual issues interesting. I think Bendis did an amazing job of Powers with the letters column. Mm-hmm. By making the letters column something that's almost as interesting as the book itself. So that's one thing to try to think about with the Cross Bronx. I've got a folder full of rejection letters that I've collected from you know, different editors and companies from over the years that I'm going to be publishing in the back of Cross Bronx. And part of that, it's not like a big finger to the people who turned me down when I was 18 and
look at
drawing
me.
Horror comics. Not that at all. It's more as there's a lot of creators out there who are struggling, who go through the rejection process. And I want to show them. I want to show the people that, you know, you have to struggle to get to where you're at.
So the letters column is going to be called Suck It?
Yeah, something like that.
It's going to be a picture of you on a big throne getting, like, a scepter.
No, no. Some of the other letter columns that we'll do or in the back of the issue, there's an undercover cop that I know who's worked in New York for, I don't know, 25 years or so. He worked right undercover and stuff. So I'm going to do a nice big interview with him, since obviously it would relate to the Cross Bronx. I've got a bunch of Alex Toth letters I'm probably going to publish in the back as well. So, you know, the idea is basically if you're doing individual issues, find reasons for people to buy it, because for most people, including myself, just kind of wait for the trades now.
You mentioned Alex Toth and his passing. Obviously, you know, a lot of people were connected to him and obviously a huge fan base and that. But I know you had a personal connection with him and he had actually, you know, corresponded with you over the years. Can you touch on his relationship or your relationship with him and how he maybe influenced your work?
Well, my relationship with Alex was basically fanboy / curmudgeon-y old man.
You're a lad.
and you could say that's not insulting. I mean, he kind of, that was his reputation and he wasn't afraid of it. And I think what was wonderful about when you get older is you can still be polite to people without taking shit anymore.
You know, the advantages.
It was one of the letters that in one of my correspondence, my favorite letter was, Alex was, I had sent him a bunch of art, and he said this stuff was great, and he said I was really, really good, but that I needed to roll up my prayer mat to Bruce Timm and burn it.
And I was like, wow.
Take that, whippersnapper.
Exactly. You know, and
go get me a switch from a tree.
But at the same time, I was like, that's awesome. He likes my work enough to tell me, you know, that, you know, what he saw was just too much. What he called was the shovel head that I drew. That's the main thing that I have, the main holdover for my Bruce Timm influence is that kind of sort of S-curve on the face.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he doesn't like that or if he can't tell with Alex what he likes and what he doesn't, because he's just kind of curmudgeon-y about everything, you know. So I love that letter because he was taking the time to compliment me on it, which he in earlier letters he didn't do. He was just saying, oh, less lines, you're looking good, you know, whatever. You know? But he loved art and had a huge passion for it. I mean, you'd write him a letter, and he would write back and send you a bunch of sketches. And the letter was sort of like this, I had to put it like this. It was almost like a psycho killer letter. He would start the letter on the top left-hand part of the page. And I don't mean where the lines began. I mean in the top left
corner like in seven.
Of the page. And then it would be one long run-on sentence. It would be like old Greek where there was like no punctuation, capital letters or small letters. Just one long run-on sentence that went all the way to the back of the other page on the far bottom right of the page.
Wow.
So he was able to get all of his thoughts and end it. Just, you know, it was like, oh, end of the page, end of my thoughts. And it was amazing because that's a lot of time and effort that he would put into his correspondence. And it wasn't just with me. It was basically anybody who wrote him. And he was just wonderful about that. His last years were spent mostly just corresponding with other artists and stuff. It was really unfortunate that he built the self-image that he was, I don't know if failure was the right word, but that he wasn't appreciated and such, and he definitely thought that he was, you know, an outsider and just kind of forgotten. And it wasn't until he got ill, when he got like 5 or 6 bags of letters in the mail, that he realized how much people really did care about him. Even though every time guys like myself or Mike Allred or whoever wrote to him and told him how much his art meant to us and his correspondence meant to us, I don't think he felt it until he saw those letters. And it was really unfortunate that he passed, I don't know, like 2 weeks after he got out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually talking about going to San Diego this year.
Wow. Wow. That would have been great. I mean, I guess the only thing you can take from it is that at least he did get that realization before he passed, and a lot of times.
Yeah, and he died at the drawing board. You know, I mean, that's every artist's goal. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
I look at Will Eisner when he passed, and he was drawing up to about the week before he died. You know, and I'm like, that's all I really want out of life is to have my brain, you know, to keep sane, keep it from going crazy, and drawing up to my last days, you know. So, I mean, that's the goal. That's the life. And, you know, these guys did it and stuff, so. And they're well-loved by their fans and family and whatnot, and that's what's important.
Hi, I'm Matt Fraction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
Well, getting back to the Cross Bronx, let's talk a little bit about that story. Can you tell us more about, you know, what the story's about, the characters in it, and what we can expect from it?
The core of the story is it's a crime noir book, similar to Powers, but without the superhero element. There's a supernatural element to it. And it's basically the fight with this detective, Rafael Ponte, who is struggling to this little war between his belief in earthly justice versus his faith in God. Because he doesn't believe in the beginning of the story, basically you have to reverse the way your characters begin in your story and the way they end in the story. So the way it begins in the story is that he believes he's lost his faith in God and that he's just this, you know, strict cop. But things start to happen. He gets involved with Santeria. And of course he has to start questioning, you know, those beliefs. And, you know, that little journey that he goes on is the crux of the story. In the meantime, he's investigating a series of gang-related murders, which, you know, you finally find all the supernatural stuff being tied up into, and there's this ghost character, similar to possibly either The Crow or High Plains Drifter, the old Clint Eastwood film, running around killing people and stuff. So that's the eye candy of the book, is the chick running around with the gun. So that's the crux of the story, and it's influenced largely by my wife's in-laws. My wife's Puerto Rican. Go visit her family. They all live in the Bronx. There's this area of the Bronx called the Cross Bronx, and that's where Route 95, which goes all the way down from Florida up to like past Boston, this huge highway that goes up the East Coast, it crosses through the Bronx, and that's the name, the Cross Bronx. And the name itself always kind of just generated the sort of imagery in my mind and such. And then going to visit the family over in the Bronx, getting to see the vast differences there, it's just a great landscape for stories, because you have really, I grew up in the suburbs, a very Wally and the Beaver kind of neighborhoods and stuff. So my idea of the Bronx was that it was like brownstones and apartment buildings, and parts of it were like blasted out, like Fort Apache, you know. and maybe there are definitely parts like that, but most of the Bronx is actually really nice, and I was really surprised. And that's the kind of stuff I wanted to cover in the book. So the Bronx itself is a personality with, you know, some pretty far extremes. And the characters are, a lot of them are influenced by people that I know there. And if you know the Bronx at all, anybody who lives in the area, they actually recognize a bunch of different landmarks that I put in the comic, especially around the Castle Hill area.
And this is a Cross Bronx is a 4-issue miniseries. Any plans further, you know, depending on how well it goes for you, to go back and revisit this sort of?
Not for the comic. I've been pretty blessed by having a really good agent in Hollywood land, and sold a couple of projects. And if somebody in television was to look at this, there are definitely ways to expand it in television. But if we do it as a movie, or as it is as a comic book, I don't see any need to do anything more than the single story.
I was going to joke and say, yeah, it'll be a movie. I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Is there room for fan fiction?
Is there room for fan fiction? That's funny.
He was serious.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess there is, because, I mean, basically, the idea is that if you were to take the Cross Bronx and expand it to anything else, it's simply that it would be involving these main characters who we introduced to in the first issues. And you know, now that they've stepped their foot into the supernatural, you know, it's just, you know, now they're in it, you know what I mean? And then to introduce other elements of the supernatural. The Bronx area is really interesting because it's a mix of traditional Catholicism, Santeria, superstition, and there's a couple other forms of sort of more, I don't say darker religions, but there's all kinds of stuff going on over there. So it's a really interesting mix of traditional and non-traditional beliefs that leave a lot of room to be explored as long as they're, you know, respected, you know.
Well, you know, I've noticed in your work and Ivan's work, both you both tend to really use the settings, use the cities. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
New York City Mech, and
NYC Mech. When you look at it, the city itself is a character, you know?
Right? And I've noticed it in other works of yours. You know, Powers, obviously, that city is so alive and part of that world. Is that something you guys consciously think about, or is it just something that naturally comes through the work?
I think with Powers, that happened organically. Like, we didn't plan that on happening, but it definitely did. NYC Mech and the Cross Bronx, it happened in specifically because they're real places. And when they're real places, even though you go, you know what, the vast majority of the people reading this, they've never been to New York City or the Bronx. It's not going to matter to them, but it does matter to people who are there, you know what I mean? Who have been there. There's a big difference. And that's how a city really starts to get a personality. Good example is in the latest issue of Civil War number 2. I was reading it, and there's one of the characters are running around, and they're being chased by SHIELD agents, and it happens around like West 23rd Street, New York City, and it's beautifully drawn. And so these these really tall glass business buildings and stuff. But West 23rd Street doesn't look anything like that. No. West 23rd Street is like more brownstones, older style stone buildings and stuff. But you only know that if you're there. It doesn't ruin the book at all. But for people who know the area, if you read it and it looks like the area that it's supposed to take place in, you go, oh my God, that's, you know, you get a stronger connection to it. It feels more real.
Sure. There, we live in Chicago, and there are occasionally, you know, comic writers will get out of New York and actually write a story that takes place in Chicago, and you can smell it like a fart in a car if they if they don't know what Chicago is like.
Chicago has a specific look, especially when you're not in the middle of the business district where you got the tall buildings and shit, you know?
Sure. I mean, they'll show an alley, and you can look at that, and it's like, that is not a Chicago alley. That is not a Chicago street. But on the other hand, whenever someone like in 100 Bullets, Eduardo Rizzo, and it's largely because Brian Azzarello was here in Chicago, I'm sure that he wouldn't let him get away with it, but some of those Chicago scenes in that first arc are absolutely amazing, and I respect that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you have to treat a city like a person, as far as I'm concerned, you know. The city is as much of a character where it takes place in as any person is, so... I think that's pretty important.
Well, I think a lot of what people want to know is you've worked with Bendis on Powers, and now you're doing this with Ivan. You know, are you sick of using your talents to elevate these hack writers up to superstar?
I'm actually using my own hack abilities to learn from these talented writers. You know, even other cats like that I've worked with. Miles and Dan Berman, I worked with on Stormbreaker, and he helped out my first Thor arc, and we did Blood River together. While we're at the same level of writing, I think you can still learn from other guys on the same level as long as they have different strengths and weaknesses than you do. And one thing that I didn't want to do was to just jump into the writing. Well, I've kind of been writing basically all my life, and it's not always. You know, I wasn't always writing for comics. I would write ideas down and such. I didn't want to go full on into writing just blindly, because you see that too many times. And I think it's actually pretty disrespectful to the art form for artists when they go, you know, I'm just going to write my own stuff. And it's clear that, you know, they didn't prepare for it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just jump into writing. You have to really... It's an art form that doesn't have specific rules, but there are definitely some very general guidelines that work and they don't work. Especially dialogue, if you don't have an ear for it, you have to really work at it, or else it sounds really weird. Unless it's like Hellboy, it's supposed to sound weird. You know, I'm making to hurt you, you know, lines like that are great. There's too many artists that just jump into it, and I think it's actually kind of disrespectful to other writers. So one of the things I wanted to do was at least study the form, and as soon as I started work with Brian, it's really when I started studying writing, and he told me about studying films and dialogue, and handed me a certain amount of books to read over, and you know it's been a slow process, and it's only been a couple of years that I really started feeling comfortable writing on my own, and now I'm really happy with it. But I'm still also going to choose to work with other people because I've done it so long. I actually enjoy working with other writers.
What is it? Do you think about comics that makes so many people think they can just jump in and do it, and it seems so easy to so many people, and then it's evident that it's not once they kind of get into it?
Well, both the strength and the weakness, I was just talking with Heidi McDonald about this, at HeroesCon, both the strength and the weakness of comics is its open-door policy. You know, the fact that anybody with enough ambition can become a comic book artist or comic book writer or publish their work. And that's resulted in some amazing stuff, but also resulted in the guys who you walk by their table and you pray to God they don't make eye contact with you. Then you have to look at their book. But also a lot of the guys who started out with really, really bad comics develop into really great artists or writers. And if it wasn't for that ability to get their work out there and to get it to be seen, they might not have been focused enough to stay on track. I know my early work certainly was crap. and getting to do the con circuit and having my stuff published helped keep me focused. So I think that's one of the reasons why people find it so easy to jump into. Also because it is deceptively easy. You know, you look at some of the badly drawn comics out there or some of the comics that you don't think are written so well, and you go, you know what, I could do better than that. And it's a good place to start. But some people should also finish there, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of fast out of the gate, but can't finish the race.
I could write a better Frodo meets Spider-Man story than that.
Let me tell you, I had this bizarre pitch the other day. I'm at a store, and there's a guy that I know there, and he's there with his friend. And he had told his friend that I write comics. And the guy just went, this is a good example of everybody thinks that they can just tell a story.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you know, I've got this story about, this is how you should do comics that everybody will want to read it, not just grown up fanboys, but like, you know, Wall Street guys and stuff. I'm like, all right, let me hear this, right? He says, so there's a scientist who creates this virus that creates, it causes everybody to sprout wings so that everybody around the world can now fly. And now there are no boundaries to anything. Everybody's all open, and you could go down to the Cape of South Africa, and you could put your finger in the water, and you're touching two oceans at once, and, you know, all these bloody ideas. And that was like, you want people to be able to fly? They're going to get tired. You know, who's going to fly to, just because you have wings doesn't mean you can fly to Europe. You're going to get tired. And I'm sorry, if people in America start, I just said this to him now. if people in America start sprouting wings, the Bible Belt will go crazy. They're going to be like, Jesus is coming back, and it's God's judgment on earth, and let's kill everybody without wings, and you know what I mean? It's like...
Now, that would be cool.
You're just a hater. You're just a hater, man.
He wanted to create a utopia, and I'm making...
That guy just threw his
temper. Yeah, no, it's going to create more problems. People start sprouting wings.
Utopias are boring. You need crazy Bible Belt.
That's the end of your story. You reach utopia, period, end of story. And a happy ending. Nice.
But what if in that utopia... there's someone with, like, leather wings instead of feather wings, you know?
Someone has spikes on the wings, and they can shoot
someone
out.
With knives or blades on those wings.
Wait a minute.
That's been done.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, we've got a couple forum posts here for some questions for you. And actually, we have a couple questions for Ivan. So can you do an Ivan Brandon impersonation?
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to sound cool and aloof.
this first one is from our good buddy Pat Loika, and he has some very nice things to say about you, which I won't repeat. And then
I think Pat's one of my buddies from the message board.
Yes. He's from the Bendis board.
Yeah, Pat is a great guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And he goes for Mike.
And he can pick me up really easy.
Yeah, he's a strong man. He's a big Samoan fellow.
A large, lovely man, that Pat Loika. He goes, for Mike, is there a chance we can see you draw or even write an NYC mech story?
Yes. Ivan and I talked about it, and we've got some stuff planned. I'm drawing something in 24/7, which is coming out relatively soon from Ivan. But we definitely plan on working together both on NYC Mech and non-NYC Mech stuff.
All
right. Great.
And for Ivan, I see you at a lot of cons, and I always see you sketching. Any chance of us seeing any sequential work from you anytime soon? How about a collaboration art-wise with Mr. Oming?
I don't know about that, man. Mike is so good. I just don't think that... if I touch pen to paper, it might just burst into flames. Ivan, that was really nice of you, man. I appreciate it.
Ivan, it was nice of you to let us conference you in there for that question. Pat adds on, he goes, the trailer for the book and all the preview art kicks ass, but all I ever needed to know were the names of the creators involved to win me over. I wish you both the best of luck with the series and with your other projects.
So that's the check is in the mail, Pat.
our buddy.
Yeah, that's how you really make it in the industry, is payola. You have to pay off every person you want reading your book.
Pay to read. Pay to read. That's how it goes.
Yeah, but we're cheap, so. our buddy Vince B. in Pennsylvania wrote in, and he basically asked, we've already gone over it, but he is voicing his opinion that he would be very excited about you taking a turn on Thor. So I did want to mention that. And then Brian Bowles from Tennessee, who actually does our webcomic on AroundComics.com, he asked, I would like to know if they have ever considered... Cross Bronx is a television series, so
the thing is, when you do a comic, you plan on it to just be the comic book. You want to keep it in its purest form, but if you want to retire, you have to hope for a film or television show, because it's very difficult to retire off of comics.
Well, I thought you wanted to die at your genre.
Yeah, I thought, didn't you say you wanted to die at your drawing board?
Yeah, but I meant like when I was like 90, not when I was like 40.
He wants it to be a pure gold drawing board.
but I have a kid and a mortgage and a wife and You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, that stuff is definitely part of the picture, but it's you never create yourself to, you know, for that ultimate goal.
You know, that was actually...
You can tailor it towards that, you know, mm-hmm. but if you set out specifically to do that, 9 times out of 10, you're going to fail.
I actually had that... I had that question for you a little bit earlier that I was going to ask. What is more important to you, commercial or critical success? And I know commercial success pays the bills, but what is most important to you?
Oh, commercial success, because no matter how much it sells, there's always going to be somebody out there telling you it sucks.
Okay.
You know, and it's, it's the downfall to being successful is like waking up to hate mail.
Nice. That is the best, most honest answer I've ever had to that question.
Well, you know,
no matter how much you sell, you're still going to wake up,
yeah.
and you're going to have that email of, you killed Hulka, you suck, next time I see you on your bike, I'm going to run you over. You know what I mean? That's part of, so critical success doesn't matter as much because, also I've got bills, I have a kid and a mortgage and a wife.
Well, yeah, it's always...
But that is also why I do those side projects, to be honest. Those... Sure. You know, the 86 volts. I mean, 86 volts, the dead girl, is this really weird little vertigo-like death poem that, you know, I didn't care if anybody got it or not. You know, I mean, I cared, but it was definitely done straightforward for the artistic expression. But I made sure that was a one-shot so that I wasn't pouring my life into it so that if it fails, I didn't have to slap my wrist open, you know.
Well, it's always more suspicious if you do something and everyone likes it. That's always odd.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost that sort of Johnny Depp approach where, you know, you do the mainstream thing so that you can do your independent stuff, you know? And I've got by this point, there's five or six of those black and white one-shots that a lot of people don't see that I'm not even really promoting that hard. And it's not because I think they're lesser projects, but it's because I just want to do them for the sake of doing them, so... Well, there's definitely the very commercial part of me that wants to make the money and stuff. You know, there's reluctantly that, you know, the independent artist guy who's stuck in there and wants to do his own thing from time to time.
Any chance at seeing any more of the Series 6?
There's some interesting news about that, but we're not ready to release it yet. But as far as the comic book goes, I've tried several times with Dan to come up with more story, and we had more story in mind. But every time I started to put down paper, it became darker, darker, and more twisted. And my gut told me that's not the way to go with it, so I kept fighting against it. So at this point, there's no plans for a comic book thing, but there's something on the horizon else for six. So.
Ah, interesting. Well, I really enjoyed that book, and you actually did and you do this quite a lot. It seems like you're sort of a video fiend. I mean, you seem to have a video camera on you all the time, and you're always making little, you know, funny movies and trailers and stuff. And you did a really interesting. You did the six film, basically.
Oh, thanks.
That was very cool to see, and I loved the book. I just thought it was great stuff.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks. Yeah, the short film was an exercise in trying to, you know, tell a story in a different medium, and it was pretty hard as far as getting a linear story on film is harder, I think, than getting a linear story on paper. And eventually what happened was six was pretty abstract in the film. We ended up doing a second cut that I put up on YouTube that's shorter, and it's even more abstract, and it works a lot better because there's no sense that we're trying to convey exactly what's going on in the plot, and it's more abstract and works better as an art house film than mm-hmm. a straightforward, you know, action film thing.
Well, I can say I certainly, even, you know, reading the book, I wasn't sure what the heck was going on, but I know I liked it. It was just one of those real surreal. I mean, it was just I was blown away by that book. But
it was that was sort of along the lines of those weirder artistic things that I was interested in. I was very influenced by a film called Alphaville by Godard, you know, the French dude.
Mm-hmm.
And
you don't mean Goddard, do you? From the Bendis?
Yeah, Goddard from the Message Board. yeah, it was, you know, it was influenced by some pretty weird stuff, and I was hoping I didn't lose too many people on it.
Brian also had another question. He said he had an old issue of Draw Magazine where you talk about your drawing process, and he was wondering if you still use laser printer grade copy paper to draw on.
For the most part, yeah, I do. I got to a point in my career where I was just before Powers, I was trying to use all the best paper and all the best brushes, and I would really have to go on these like journeys, because you go to your favorite art store and they were out of the kind of paper that you wanted, or they no longer carried that brush, and then you had to find where else to get the brush. And then once you get the brush, it's a $24 brush. And once I got to Powers and I got to the simplified stuff, I just decided I'm only going to use the art supplies that I can get at like Staples or like one of those little craft
Hobby Lobby
stores, like
or
something like that. Mm-hmm. So really, most of what I draw Powers on and my other stuff, for the most part, is laser copy paper, which 11 by 17 comes in sheets of like 50. It's thicker than photocopy paper, but thinner than Bristol board. And I ink it with like cheap watercolor brushes and ballpoint pens.
Yeah, I remember you told me that before, and I was like, really? You use ballpoint pens on that? And I couldn't believe it until I saw you doing it, and it was just like, that's...
Bic or Paper Mate?
That's a secret.
That's a trade secret. You can't talk about
it. The secret is it's not the equipment that helps you draw better. You know, and a lot of us young guys fall into that trap, and I know a lot of guys who, you know, they go out and they get, like, these specific kind of pens and all this stuff, and you get trapped into that instead of thinking, you know what? Jack Kirby drew with a number 2 pencil, you know? That's a pretty valuable lesson, I think.
Brian, also wanted to compliment you on your excellent creator interviews at BuzzScope. I know you've been doing those for a little while now.
Thanks.
How's that been? Now that you're part of the media, do you have creators just hate you now?
No, because you know I've got a rule to respect other creators and such. And while I'm not trying to be politically correct in any way, I don't want to slam anybody or whatever. And with the interviews, it's just, I just wanted to ask slightly more personal questions with those, and it's more of a conversation. I mean, people will comment usually after interviews, wow, we learned as much about Mike as we did, you know, the creator. And really, it's less of an interview and more of just a back and forth talk about, usually the themes you'll find in them are, how has your past affected what you do now in comics? And most of my questions come out of that category. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been some pretty eye-opening interviews, especially Paul Jenkins. He was really open in his interview and brought some really, really cool stuff.
Well, if anybody hasn't seen those interviews, you also are doing something kind of unique, is that whoever you're interviewing, you do a drawing of. And I, if you haven't seen those, you should.
Warren Ellis drawings were awesome.
Yeah, they all of them have been great, and it's just really cool to see you.
The next time we hook up at a con, I may ask you to do a Warren Ellis sketch. It was that.
Awesome.
I loved it.
I love drawing Warren. He's great.
Warren Ellis fighting Batman.
Yeah. Well, Michael, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. Can you give us the rundown on when The Cross Bronx is coming out and all the information that listeners need to get a hold of copies of that?
All right, thanks. The Cross Bronx is 4 issues, 4 color issues, being colored by Nick Filardi, who colors NYC Mech, beautiful sort of this European palette. It's 4 issues. Co-written, co-created by myself and Ivan Brandon. I'm doing all the art. I've been told, including by Joe Casado, who gave us this really nice push in his Joe Fridays column, that it's my best work outside of Powers. And so all very excited about it. September from Image. It's in the current catalog to order now. If it's too late for the catalog, you can order on online sites. There's a site that carries, it's got a good catalog of all my stuff called Capri.com. Which is KHEPRI.com, and you can find the Cross Bronx on there and order directly from there or any of the other online sites that are out there and such. And it's 4 monthly issues as opposed to bi-monthly. So
there
we go.
One other anthology I want to give you a chance to promote since Ivan is not here. I personally am really looking forward to 24/7. Can you talk about that for just a moment?
It's really shocking. I mean, I was talking actually to one of the publishers at Image at HeroesCon, and they said, yeah, they want to do more books with Ivan and stuff, and Ivan told about 24/7 and told about the artists, and they didn't know who most of the artists were, and then Ivan showed them the art, and it's mind-blowing. A lot of these guys are independent, unknown guys. They don't have this independent feel they've got more of this sort of European animation feel. And a lot of them actually are European artists, so pretty well known over in Spain and England and Italy and France, but here they're not known so well. So don't let name brand be the thing that attracts you to it or detracts you to it, although there are some pretty big names on there. Just look at it. Look at the stuff that's online, and it will blow you away. You'll go like,
There's a great interview with Ivan at CBR, and the list of talent on that book is amazing.
But what's even more amazing is beyond the list of known names, when you just look through the book and you see guys you've never heard of before, and it will just blow you away. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. In fact, I think my page, I did one page in it. I think my page is probably the weakest page in the entire thing. And I like my page.
I doubt it.
I doubt that's the case.
It might be. We don't know.
Anything?
Yeah,
I haven't seen it yet.
You could be right.
I'm not going to rule it out.
So. Actually, my page is kind of special to me because my wife wrote it. It was based off of a little poem outside of from her journal.
Oh, that's amazing.
So it's the first thing I kind of did with my wife or wrote with the wife and such.
Oh, very cool. So we can
expect. Which is why we're doing this interview now and not yesterday. Yesterday was our 10-year anniversary.
Yes, so. Congratulations.
Happy anniversary.
Yay!
we weren't gonna reschedule with you until we found out it was your anniversary. We were like, screw him in. You know, it's his anniversary. All right, I'll get up Saturday morning, no problem. So.
Hey, guess what? Ivan Brandon is calling on the other line.
Oh, geez. Right at the end. Right at the end. Well, we could do an hour with Ivan now. You know, I guess we release a 3-hour show.
I'll call him back with your number and stuff, so.
All right.
Okay.
Anything on the horizon for you from Marvel at all or anywhere else?
There's something huge coming out of Marvel that I can't announce yet, but I'm going to be writing my first monthly book for them.
Come on, man. Just between us,
you can tell us. Nobody's listening.
Listeners, you know?
No.
It won't go anywhere, man.
Okay. It's Eagle of the Living Planet.
Nice. All right. I can't.
That's an Around Comics exclusive there, folks.
Can you give us any like spoilers for Civil War and any you know anything going on there? I know.
Can you ruin your career? Hey,
could you just?
I don't know about Civil War. All I know is Marvel better stick with the premise that they're setting up with it, not just let it dissipate.
Yep.
You know, because this is it's a really great idea, and they're putting a lot of effort into it, and it would kind of suck if like 3 years now. It like just didn't happen, you know.
No more Civil
War. That's what we were talking. We were actually talking about that this week, and I'm like, how are they going to stay with this? How is you know? I'm just dreading.
As long as the people in charge now are in charge, it will always be like this. Is from what my understanding of it is.
Wow, I can barely believe that. I mean, it's just amazing to me that at some point, like, you know, Doctor Strange or you know Wanda or something's going to happen where everything is forgotten, and that's what I'm dreading.
Eventually, you know, like 20 years from now, hopefully, you know.
Well, you know, do you think people will refer to it? You know, we talk, you know, our generation, we're all around 30 years old, and we have a pre-crisis, post-crisis. Yeah. Is what do you think it'll be as big as pre-Civil War, post-Civil War?
I think not only does it have I think so, and I think it actually has the potential to be larger than that because. Crisis was great and just kind of wiping the board, you know, clean and getting a chance to start over. Was this is more of a restructuring to how the Marvel Universe works. They really tightened up the reins on continuity and such with it. So, I think it's definitely got that potential. And they've got great writers working on it and editors who really care a lot about the project. So,
yes, they do.
I think it's definitely got that opportunity there.
Speaking about DC, is there any chance of you ever doing any work at DC, or is there are there any characters there that you'd like to work on?
Oh yeah, on both accounts, totally. There's no plans right now. I think most of the editors that I know at Marvel, I mean at DC, I've cycled out by this point because it's been so long since I've really done serious work with them. But yeah, definitely in the future, I'll work with DC, and there's your characters there, like New Gods, that of course I would love to play around with and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Michael?
I have a good relationship with them. I see them at conventions and stuff.
Any chance of a Michael Oeming, Phil Hester anthology? Where we can just.
That would be great. I mean, we'll go back to the Caliber days, so yeah.
That would be awesome.
I think you guys, all you Caliber guys, should do some sort of like, you know, Caliber retrospective.
Oh, the Caliber reunion?
That would be pretty amazing.
That
to
would
see.
Be awesome. Well, Michael, do you have any other shout-outs or messages you want to send out there to
Angry diatribes?
Yeah.
Anyone you want
to? Death threats?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to give a big shout-outs to Red Sonja. I don't know. It's all good. I guess the only next big thing for me is I'll be doing the Baltimore show in September.
Okay.
And that's Best Kept Secret in Comics. Get a chance to come out and check it out.
Well, now you've told all 12 of our listeners. Yeah. Then there should be 12 more people.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So they'll have to,
12 listeners, that's it. This interview's over. Uh-oh.
I think we have...
Is Ivan a 9-1...
Don't say it. Yeah. That's got to be Ivan.
All right. Hold on, Mike.
Did you just hang
Hello?
Up?
Yeah, hi, this is Ivan Brandon.
Hey, Ivan, hold on just 1 second. And Ivan, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, everyone, Ivan Brandon is joining us. How you doing, Ivan?
My apologies. Holy hell opened up in my home this morning.
No problem. Michael has been saying very mean things about you for the last hour. So.
the sad thing is my intention was to go on and say mean things about him. And now, if you forget this interview tomorrow, I'm going to kill you or something. Now I'm the bad guy. No. But, it's expensive. You know, you're a hipster living in New York, man. You know,
I wish it was anything to do with something good that delayed me from calling.
Listen to a roundcomics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
And that was our first part of a two-part interview with the creators of The Cross Bronx. That was Michael Avon Oeming. Look for the Ivan Brandon interview later on this week. So I'm looking forward to hearing that again.
Absolutely. We talked to Ivan about a lot of great things, including Cross Bronx and 24/7 and some other European comics and underground stuff. And he's a really interesting guy, so certainly check back in later in the week and listen to that, as well as I don't know what else we're going to do this week, but who knows.
It turned into being a really happy accident, because I think that we got really in-depth with a lot of the questions that either Mike or Ivan would have answered, and now we got, you know, their views on all of the questions, just them, and we're able to really cover a lot of other topics. So it was actually kind of a nice accident for that to happen. A couple of announcements here. Our June contest winner, our haiku contest, Tom, you were put in charge of picking the haiku. Who is our June contest winner?
None of them are any good. No, it was, drum roll, and it's me. No, it's Wet Rats with the Watchmen one, which goes as follows. Comedian cries, blood on smiley face, button, failed heroes find love. So you win.
Congratulations. That was a thrilling read.
It's been a long couple days, Sal.
All right, so we'll be getting in touch with Wet Rats, and he'll be receiving his free trade paperback, so congratulations.
And autographed.
Yay!
Yes, the autographed 8x10.
But seriously, thanks for everyone that entered. It was really actually a lot of fun and cool to see everybody. I mean, we had so many entries, and it was wild.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool.
That was Sal's idea, by the way, to do that.
You
had the haiku idea.
I did.
And it was...
Did you?
It was a lot of fun.
I guess I did.
Yeah.
I think I threw it out as a joke, and then Chris ran with it. And I'm like, all right, what the hell? We need a contest.
Little Witch and Paper Cut.
Our next contest is Pick a Contest, because we're running out of ideas.
Yeah, we have no ideas.
We'll come up with a contest and probably release that next week.
Yeah.
And okay. It has been kind of a nutty week of recording, so forgive us for being a little scatterbrained here. And
also forgive us, I believe we're not going to actually have a news or top of the stack this week. We're going to release these two interviews separately. And then we also have, I think, a Thursday episode that we're going to release Thursday or Friday. So I think we're gonna pass on the whole news and top of the stack. I know some people might be disappointed with that, but it's just too much for us to try and
too
do
much,
after
too much.
After
no
after
moss.
The five.
I have, no moss.
We have lives.
Yeah, we do. But next
so
week we'll
it's
be
like
back.
1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
We've been here. I spend so much goddamn time in this shop. it's like more than I should pay rent here.
My dog is at home with her, you know, my three-legged dog has her one leg crossed because she hasn't been out to pee all morning.
One leg crossed.
I do have a three-legged dog.
My girlfriend wonders, thinks I'm cheating on her.
You're cheating on her with a comic book store.
That's true. That's a lot of us. Guys, I would like to mention that we are also proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. Thank you to our sponsor, geekarmor.com. So check them out, please. Everyone, have a fantastic beginning to your week. You're going to hear a lot more from us as this week goes along. So hopefully we don't overload your iPod too much. But we're very excited about the episodes that we have coming up this week. And, of course, Wizard World Chicago is coming up in a couple weeks. So you'll be hearing a lot from the Around Comics crew. Guys, have a fantastic week. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.